Hello, everyone, and Happy New Year. We are so happy you could join us for our first episode of The Breakdown in 2021. Today, we will be breaking down some recent events from the past 2 weeks, including the protest at the Capitol, Trump's subsequent impeachment, and what we can expect in the next 4 years under the Biden administration. I'm Andrea Montenegro, and with me is my co-host, Dawnvi Shaw.
Hi, everyone. It's Dawnvi, and I'm super excited for today's podcast because we're being joined by our friends from the Polititeen podcast, Varun and Damian. So if you guys want to introduce yourself, I think that'd be great.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you, Dawnvi, for the amazing introduction. My name is Varun. I'm a high school junior from Georgia. I go to the Alliance Academy for Innovation with Damian Galvin. And we began our podcast in June of last year, of 2020, talking about issues that we cared about in America. We were kind of prompted by the death of George Floyd, as you all kind of experienced last summer. And that had a big impact upon our lives. We decided the conversation was the only way forward in the midst of that crisis. We see today so much partisanship going on. We try to solve that partisanship and at least put a break to it in our communities by creating conversation with people like local politicians, Republican and Democrat, from every part of the spectrum, and national politicians like the former deputy White House Secretary, Communications Director in Eric Schultz, and a comedian on Twitter up and coming in Blair Erskine. Just a bunch of personalities we can speak to about things that Americans can, you know, care about right now. I'm glad to be here today with Damian, Dawnvi, and Andrea talking about issues that we care about today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm Damian Galvin. I'm the other half of Polititeen. I add the more emotional commentary. Well, Varun got the educated takes all the time. I'm more likely to mess up on our podcast, but, I really enjoy having conversations like Varun said. It's something that we think is extremely important on Polititeen. We think that conversations are the only way to move forward, especially in our generation. So that's what we try to do. And I think Varun got the rest covered. Like he said, we're both high school juniors. Both 16, and just looking to have conversations about politics.
And I can assure you, their podcast is so amazing. Please go listen to that right after you're done listening to this episode. Especially listen to the one that Andrea and I will be featured on next week. So when's that coming out?
We got to go check. You guys can move on. We'll tell
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll tell you.
We have to look at a whole
20
calendar.
Second. Friday the 22nd.
Listen to Polititeen. They are incredible. Okay, so we're going to get right into it, I guess. This was a consequential, not only month, but week, I would say, last 2 weeks. Last Tuesday on the 5th, we finally got the results for the Georgia runoff election, in which the Democrats took control of the Senate with the victory of both Reverend now Senator-elect Warnock and Senator-elect Ossoff. So we see that Democrats now have control over the House, Senate, and the presidency. So obviously that had some consequential impacts on the Republicans and the right wing, who have now lost control of the Senate and the White House. So we saw the consequences of that the next day at a Capitol raid, a huge riot, the first time the Capitol has been under attack since 1812 when the British took over. I think that not only is that historical, but I think that goes to say something about the right wing right now. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think that it goes to say something about American tensions more so than maybe specifically the right wing. I think that it was interesting. You guys are saying that this is your first episode of 2021. Well, you guys got a handful for a first episode. You guys have got a whole year's worth of news coverage in 2 weeks. So much happened. But, you know, starting with the election over here in Georgia, we're from Georgia. So it was very exciting to see, you know, the first African-American, the first black senator, in Georgia's history be elected. You know, I was talking to Varun, I texted him that night and I was like, first in black, fortunately, is getting a lot less common, but it's crazy that we're still in the year 2021 and we still have a first black. I guess it's a good thing, but it's still a little bit sad in a sense. But, you know, it's also exciting. And then on the other side, John Ossoff, you have a Jewish journalist being elected to Georgia Senate. which, you know, is equally as amazing. And then again, going back to Warnock, I mean, this is a child of Georgia. Deep roots in history, Ebenezer Baptist Church. There you go, Varun. I actually said it this time. And he is literally, when you think of Georgia and you think of roots, you know, that have grown here in the heart of the South, you think of Reverend Warnock and individuals like him. Obviously, his father and Martin Luther King Jr., maybe two of the most prominent historical figures in American history. And again, here from Atlanta, and now he's the first senator, a black senator from Georgia. So, you know, a lot of history being made there. And unfortunately, it was overshadowed, I think, by the events that preceded the next day. But I think it's important to still acknowledge those. What are your takes, Varun?
Yeah, I mean, me and Damian both said before that we're both from Georgia. We've been here our whole lives, for the most part, for me. And we saw this election on the ground. I mean, I campaigned for Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff, made calls for him. And so being able to be a part of the grassroots movement to elect both these senator-elects, now we can say it, was absolutely incredible. Talking about Joe Biden's victory back in November, he won. I think a lot in Georgia was based upon grassroots action, talking about how we need to take this man out of office, President Donald Trump. And I think that the power of people has never been more pronounced. We saw it come out under Obama. I've been reading Obama's book. I know Damian has it as well. I don't know if you guys are reading it, but the book talks a lot about how Obama tried to attract volunteers as opposed to supporters, because that was a much more valuable pick, because those people went out and got more supporters. And so I think that's a lot of what Joe Biden, Raphael Warnock, and the whole Democratic Party has been doing. And that's why they've been achieving success in Georgia and other deep South states. We see today Jamie Harrison, though he did not win his seat, was appointed by Biden, is supposed to be expected to be appointed as the DNC chairman, which is absolutely exciting. But it just shows how much the South has room to grow in this nation. And just talking about how much of a good day that was for America. I woke up in the morning, I saw blue in the sky, and I was like, it is blue Georgia. It's always there, but I don't know. I just saw blue Georgia on the day that Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff got elected. And that joy was really short-lived. Yeah. Because I was at school. I know Damien was at home learning from home. And I saw the news and I was absolutely shook. And I thought it was some kind of a meme. And I looked at it and I was like, this is really happening in our nation's capital. My, you know, ill-informed laughter turned into tears, basically, because I saw what was happening in our nation. And this is something that we knew was going to come. And that's the scary thing. We knew it was going to come for so long. We saw people dissatisfied, the partisan tensions in our nation coming to a fever pitch. This was something that was bound to happen. And when it did, it became an awakening call, a realization call for tens and millions of Americans across this nation. I think that we all have to have more conversations, as me and Damian said. The one rare movement of basically bipartisanship, for the most part, except for a few stragglers, was after they came back from that devastating event and voted to confirm the Electoral College's votes. And with, say, for two senators, every single other senator voted to confirm them. And that was a rare show of bipartisanship, mostly because they saw just how much their actions were causing insurrection and just tensions to raise a fever pitch in this nation. We have to reform conversation. I think that conversation is totally key to making sure people can move forward in a nation that is so struggling right now.
Right. I think to that point, following the Georgia Senate elections, we also saw something that came to view. We saw that, I would like to say that Georgia was always blue. We've just been suppressing Black people of color and votes. And people like Stacey Abrams really brought that out. They led these, as you said, grassroots movements, and they made such a big difference by simply allowing people to vote. I know Andrea and I had a talk earlier, I think it was September, maybe, where we talked about voter suppression. And Andrea, you said that a county in Texas with a population greater than Rhode Island only had one ballot drop off. Wait, so I thought that was crazy then, but I think I realize more now that it's more about suppressing Black voters. At the end of the day, systemic racism is everywhere, but it's evil. I think it's insane that even in 2020, we claim not to be a racist country. We claim to be a free country, but we're not even letting a whole group of people vote. So Again, I think that Georgia was always blue. We were just not allowing for that potential to come through.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
But I agree. And kind of what Varun was saying on the change that we're seeing, Georgia flipping, I think, you know, currently it has a big impact, but I'm looking into the future on the implications. This year, we saw so much, even Texas, a historically Republican state, during the presidential election become some like a swing state. And I think that has a lot of meaning for the future, for now. And it was overshadowed by what happened at the Capitol, but I think it's really important to acknowledge that there is change happening and that change will continue happening in the next 4 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that you guys mentioned Stacey Abrams. I'm calling her the Queen of the South over here. I think that she, more than Ossoff and Warnock, won both of them respectively their seats. And you ready for a hot take here? The Democrats are just as at fault for this voter suppression as are the Republicans. Because, I said it on the podcast, and I know Varun in part disagrees with me somewhat on this take, but you have Joe Biden coming out and saying, the vote is sacred. And I got mad on our podcast. I'll try not to hear, but how are you going to say the vote is sacred, but you're going to let Republican officials knowingly suppress the vote? How are you? You're not going to stand up. You're not going to get aggravated. You're not going to make a movement. I mean, thinking about this, right? I don't want to go into whataboutism, but if this had been something that the Republican Party was crying about, they would have been the first ones to stand up and shout and protest and riot. But because it was the Democratic Party, and I feel like the Democratic Party is very susceptible to getting pushed around. And they have been in the past. And I think that there's either one of two things here. Either the vote isn't as sacred as we claim it to be, or the Democratic Party is guilty of not treating it as such. And I think, again, they're just as much at fault as the Republican Party is.
Yeah. I think that my perspective is Stacey Abrams, she walked for Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff to run. And that's true in the most basic sense possible. And I think that Democrats, as opposed to Republicans, we don't fight suppression. And I'm speaking as a Democrat myself, a neoliberal. We don't fight suppression with violence and rioting and insurrection. We fight it with winning seats. And that's exactly what Stacey Abrams did. And I think that there's a certain, a goodness to following your constitutional obligations in protecting the right to vote. I think that when you lose an election, obviously Brad Raffensperger is being hailed as a hero from the left. Some people on the left, I disagree. I met Brad Raffensperger. I've seen him a lot of times and I have analyzed his policies. And though he's protecting the vote right now, he's really only protecting his suppressionist policies. And you saw Raffensperger protect Joe Biden's victory per se, and also come out and talk about his support for more no excuse absentee voting. His support for restraining no excuse absentee ballot voting. Talk about him trying to constrict the mail vote next year with no excuses. And so those are things that I think speak louder than what his actions are during this campaign. Obviously, we want Raffensperger to protect the vote, but also cut back on his suppressionist policies. I think that, one of the main things I wanted to mention is that when you fight things you don't like, and it's hard to, and Democrats get pushed around for it a lot, I think it is always important to consider the consequences of your actions. And for example, if Democrats came out and they started using vehement rhetoric, and they started, resorting to violence and started resorting to things that Republicans would normally do and suppressing the vote even more that Republicans would normally do, it sets a dangerous precedent for our party. And I think that, I always consider the Democrats moral superiors in many senses of the term. And I think that to uphold that superiority, sometimes there are some risks involved. Once again, for somebody else to run, you have to walk. And I think Democrats are making that long walk, but I hope that it'll pay off with Generation Z, our generation coming out and voting. We talked about how a majority of the South is blue, except for, voter suppression is causing it to become red, more so. I think that I agree. And also the Gen Z is extremely blue. We know that, right? Only a couple of states are actually red in terms of electoral seats with Generation Z. Our generation Utah. Is very, very, very progressive. Talk about Utah.
Yeah, Utah's the only one.
Yeah. And so it just goes to show that the future is very, very, very promising. And we have to wait and we have to continue to walk.
Right. I think that GOP hypocrisy kind of came to a height during the insurrection. I mean, during the actual riots themselves, the same people that claimed to be pro-life refused to put on masks even when they were handed to them, and then mocked the representative who gave them, who offered them the masks. The same people who claimed that Blue Lives Matter were the ones who killed Officer Brian Sicknick, who was actually from the town right next to mine. He actually went to school in my town. And so I think it was insane how fast the right wing kind of switches onto themselves. My representative got COVID because her GOP colleagues right next to her refused to wear a mask. So I think during the riots, we kind of found out that the same people who preach all this stuff just don't practice it. They're consistently switching back onto themselves. And honestly, it's getting dangerous for the rest of us too. It's no longer just political, it impacts lives. They're encouraging their supporters not to go out and wear masks. And they're doing that by staying maskless in a very densely packed room themselves. We saw videos of them locking themselves in to a room to stay safe from the riots outside. But I mean, at the end of the day, supporters are gonna see that. They look at these politicians who decidedly know better than them, not wearing masks and stuff, and it's still happening. So I think that's kind of insane.
Yeah, I know we talk about hypocrisy all the time on our podcast. Is one of our main points. Me and Damien do agree with. We've been disagreeing a lot lately about economic issues, but hypocrisy on the right has been main thing that we talk about, more so in the sense that every single thing beyond law and order and beyond mask wearing is a complete and utter hypocrisy. One thing that I wanted to mention is that a lot of my Republican colleagues and major news networks like OAN, which I'm going to talk about later, hopefully, information deterioration on OAN and these channels, they talked about how police brutality was compounded by the death of a white, terrorist at the Capitol, getting shot in the head. For trying to break in to the room in which people, I believe, were sitting down, congressmen and congresswomen and senators were sitting down to hide from these protesters and these rioters. And so it just baffles me that they talk about police brutality now when all we've been fighting for all summer was an end to police brutality. And so I think that it's a vast and major hypocrisy that we have to curtail before it gets any worse, because we have to agree on some common issues. And one of them being that Black lives matter, and they matter especially now, being that Black lives are constantly at danger by our political situation currently. The fact that people can talk about how every individual, every man and woman is given an equal chance to grow in this nation baffles me, because it's simply not true. People are constricted by their economic status, their minority status, and things like that. And I just think that people have to open their minds and look at sources that are credible and accurate to get that information. We talk about information deterioration on OAN and these major news channels. We're going to talk about, you know, social media being a proponent of that later on. But I think that one of the main things to recognize is that people do not do their fact checking. People don't read their own sources. People don't look at multiple sources. Their information is constricted to one channel or two channels and a couple of commentators. And that's a very, very vast issue, especially today. We talk about truth decay. Truth decay is one thing that me and Damien talked about with one of our very first guests, Jennifer Kavanaugh from the RAND Corporation, who talked about how there has been this massive, massive cult mentality in America that everything you see on the news or on social media is absolutely right. And many, many times those things are wrong. You have to do your own independent review to get the right information. And many Americans just see past that. And it's a real, real issue. We talked about Brian Sicknick. Brian Sicknick was a Trump supporter before he died. And he was killed by the very people who he supported his entire life. And it talk about, you know, how the fact that Brian Sicknick was also a gun control supporter. So many things in that situation just do not add up. And I think that as long as we try to focus upon the truth and in intelligent media opinions, we will succeed. And once again, I go back to having conversations. When you have conversations with the other side, you may begin to understand their perspective on things like police brutality, because you saw it during this Capitol rioting situation. People talked about police brutality when it impacted them. So I think they have a capacity to understand what is right only if it is put in their mold and served to them on a platter.
Yeah, absolutely.
To me, it was super admirable to finally find out that Officer Sicknick was a Trump supporter, but he still tried his best to fend off the people. Unfortunately, he did die doing it, but he executed his duty to protect his country the way he was supposed to. And that is, I think that's what the right was trying to say when they were rallying for Blue Lives Matter. Unfortunately, it seems that they really didn't believe in that, because when the time finally came for them to manifest that ideology in real life, they refused. And they killed an officer. And I just think it's absolutely terrible that we even have to deal with seeing people who really care about their country being killed just trying to protect it. So the insurrection, I guess, bought out the worst of the right into our eyes, I think. Andrea and I were talking, and we genuinely think like the GOP is tarnished forever because of Trump's legacy. These last 4 years have been violent, and they've been detrimental to so many people, people at the border, young people, people of color, LGBT people. I think this is all going down in history books, but I don't know if he realizes that. But at the end of the day, his actions really did hurt the GOP.
I mean, talk about the GOP folding in on itself. Genuinely, this was disgusting. This was an embarrassment. You know, earlier we had the whole thing with Amy Coney Barrett and her getting confirmed, and that being compared to the Republican stance before during the Obama administration, and how we had the Democrats. And Damian, this kind of shows how they gave up on that. You know, they chose not to confirm someone to the Supreme Court. But now we saw, you know, this year that happened during the Trump administration. Then we had the whole Blue Lives Matter, but that was just a response to Black Lives Matter, just a reactionary, I don't know what to call it, a farce, just something fake. And that kind of came to be at the Capitol. We saw that happen physically. You know, we see, they were just reporting Ali Alexander, who is a person from Stop the Steal, has claimed that there were three GOP lawmakers that helped him get into the Capitol. Like, the GOP is tainted forever. There is no way that they can come back from this. To me, this is like the last straw. They have just continuously added more and more. And obviously, like you guys were saying, the Democratic Party is not perfect, but I think now there will be a change after this. Just even looking at the response, it was so ridiculous yesterday listening to Republican representatives trying to excuse Trump's actions. You know, I was listening to Matt Gaetz talk during my lunch break from school, and his excuse was, yes, there was violence at the Capitol, but there's been violence before. Look at all of these other violent things that have happened. It's like saying, oh, I killed someone, but so did this person. That is not an excuse. There is no way to explain that. It's founded on nothing. And it's just so upsetting because you see it happen again and again. Their arguments are worthless, and yet so many people listen to them. And it's like you want to make people see. And I think people will start to see very soon.
Yeah.
Right. To your point that the GOP is folding in on itself, I think it's also important that we talk about the fact that people like Elaine Chao and Betsy DeVos jumped the ship at literally the last hour. I mean, less than 20 days before President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration. Donald Trump's former, I guess now, former Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, and former Secretary of Transportation, Elaine Chao, also wife of Senate Majority Leader, for now, Mitch McConnell. I think that's just insane to me. Again, back to the GOP hypocrisy. These people have been pushing for Donald Trump. They've been working for Donald Trump for a very long time. But now that people from both sides are openly criticizing him, we see them leaving the White House. They've left their positions. And Donald Trump, in reaction to the impeachment, he stopped paying Rudy Giuliani. They're fighting. It's like the Republican Party is in so much chaos right now. It's actually almost funny to me to imagine, until I realized that this is happening in my country, the fact that we have to deal with the consequences of the people in the White House being literal children.
Absolutely. Yeah, 1,000%. I want to say at least now Donald Trump is draining the swamp. You know, you talk about GOP hypocrisy, and then you have Betsy, he cried the whole time that he was going to drain the swamp, and then he chooses Betsy DeVos as his education secretary. And it's like, man, you're adding more alligators to the swamp. You're not draining it. But, you know, I do have, I have one critique. And again, this is something that me and Varun disagree on. You said that that the Capitol riots brought out the worst in the GOP. I think they just brought out the GOP. I think they just brought out the Republican Party. I think that the individuals there, I think that there was more individuals that wanted to be there. They were working, though. They couldn't afford to go to Washington. I think that there's millions upon millions of voters that see no problem with what happened at the Capitol. And the one thing that all those voters have in common is that they have an R in front of their names, that they vote Republican when they go to the voting booth. And, you know, the one thing that I have to say about that is that we can't attribute the characteristic, or we can't attribute the title of the worst of the GOP to these individuals, because unfortunately, they're the majority of the GOP. We can't attribute the title of not Americans to these individuals, because unfortunately, they're half of American voters. So we have to be careful with how we treat these individuals. And I say that because while they might have been there rioting and looting, or rioting and literally committing insurrection at the Capitol, they're going to come back home and they're on our soccer teams. They carpool with us. They are our neighbors. They are our police officers. As a matter of fact, 82% of police officers voted for Donald Trump. So to push them out of society is going to be scary. It's going to be, I would say, a mistake. And I think that, you know, if we want to talk about the impeachment trial, we have to be careful. We cannot push these Trump supporters out of our society, because what ends up happening when you push these individuals out of our society is that they become more radicalized. They feel more pushed out. They feel more left behind. And you can have, I've been making this comparison for a while now. Nazi Germany. After World War I, World War II literally happened because of how harsh and strict we were on Germany. So let's be careful with these impeachment trials. Let's bring these individuals back into our society. Let's make sure that we show them where they were wrong. As a matter of fact, the individual killed at the Capitol, the one shot that Varun was mentioning, that was, you know, I think Varun was almost going to say white supremacist. Unfortunately, she was a white supremacist. She had been seen at these rallies. And the reason being is because of, unfortunately, indoctrination by a social media oftentimes. And so we can't just be like, no, jail, go to jail for the rest of your life. That's the only option. You gotta go away. You're not American. Give us back your card. We got to figure out a way to show them that we love them. It's got to be hugs over hate right now. And I know that it's difficult for a lot of Americans to look at the individuals that just, you know, stormed into our nation's capital, a pillar of democracy, not only here, but across the world, and go, it's, you know, it's going to be okay. This is why you're wrong. we got to figure out a way to come together. And it's not about meeting in the middle anymore. We're past that point. It's about bringing them over to the side of the truth. So again, if we're not careful, you could see, and I said it a lot, Donald Trump is a proto-fascist. And if you are not careful with how you treat his impeachment, and if you're not careful with how you treat those individuals that support him, the proto-fascist is going to do exactly what the proto-fascist does and lead to a fascist individual. I don't think that Donald Trump, if he wins in 2024, is going to be a fascist. I don't. I think that he's going to open the door for someone to come in. And unfortunately, me and Varun, we would talk about the economic policies that we disagree on. I always said that I was more scared of a socialist revolt, like a Marxist revolt, because of the fact that people are desperate in this country. I didn't realize that we were closer to a fascist revolt. But the Capitol was literally that. And then with the Blue Lives Matter thing, I just want to second what Andrea said. Like, yeah, Blue Lives Matter is just it's a counter protest to my protest. And it's blue lives only matter when they're killing black lives.
Yeah. Damien is fond of hot takes. And that was definitely one of them. And I think that, you know, being a neoliberal, being the person that I am, I disagree on a lot of the points, mainly because that was 8,000 people. 74 million voted for President Trump. And almost every single Republican that I know, every single senator, congressman, congresswoman, Republican or Democrat, condemned what happened at the Capitol. There is a point he's mentioning, though. There is a main point that I agree with. I think that indoctrination is a big reason for this, guys. It's the fact that so many Americans have been led to believe that this election was stolen and input with that hatred from these channels and these social media sources to where they don't even know who they are. And I think that beyond people not knowing who they are, the party doesn't know who it is. I think that when you look at the GOP, the grand old party, as you guys are mentioning, I look at it as conservatism. Conservatism fights for small government, fiscally responsible government. And I think that conservatism does have its benefits when it is paired with a moral conscience. And I think that that moral conscience was seen 8 years ago. Mitt Romney, talk about John McCain before that. I think we're so young that we forget to believe and look past and see the triumphs of the Republican Party in these presidential candidates who you may not agree with them, but they sure didn't incite insurrection. They sure didn't cause violence, and they sure didn't contest the election. Mitt Romney and George W. Bush, for that matter, came out and praised President Obama for being the first ever African-American president in U.S. history. And that was what they said. And I think that the party right now is reeling. And to help them, we have to guide them back to who they are at heart. Because I think that they are fiscally responsible individuals, people who care about this country more than anything at heart. That those 8,000 people, I cannot say that for. But for the millions and millions and millions of Republicans out there, I tell you, they've got heart. And they're fighting it, and they're using it the wrong way possible. I think that they have to come back to the roots and find who they are. I think that it is far more than crumpling. It is crumpled. And to pull them out of this mess, there has to be a common message of morality. I talked with Damien earlier on our podcast. Don't want to bring too much of that in. But what I mentioned is that we can disagree on politics all we want, but our moralities must remain very similar. We are humans. And we cannot deny the fact that we have to have a common moral compass, a common sense of what is right and what is wrong. And I think that one of the biggest issues on the right and somewhat on the left is the fact that we have this blame game going around 24/7. Talk about, you know, the Capitol storming happening, the act of terrorism happening on our nation's capital. And the first thing that comes out of any Republican's mouth, for the most part, was the fact that Black Lives Matter did it over the summer. I just think that there is always a blame game going around. There's one Antifa supporter they saw. Antifa was involved on a wide scale. Like it is just the truth decay and the seeking to blame the other side is what has caused the tensions to be where they are right now. And to have a Republican Party and a Democratic Party that are both on the same moral ground, it takes conversation about what our common morals are. And I think that when you talked, I think it was Andrea, she talked about how, you know, they're going to lose elections, right? The Republican Party is going to be severely, severely distraught by what's happening right now. You see Mitch McConnell coming out and talking about how he did not completely oppose, and he was pleased to see Donald Trump being impeached for the second time and being that happening, I think that what he's catching on to and he's caught on to for the most part is the fact that corporations and corporations are basically the people and the entities that power candidates up to their seats in the Senate and House of Representatives and the presidency. Corporations are pulling out. And more than people, the money comes from corporations, especially on the right. Democrats, they get some money from people, but on the right, especially, they get their money from corporations. And for some of them, like Kelly Loeffler, $23 million from herself, right? They get money from big, big, big groups. And so the point is that if they start backing out of these Republican individuals, three they've backed out of for the most part, Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, more so today, and the president of the United States, with the PGA backing out of his hotel in New York City, announcing that they would back out of his hotels in their city, there's going to be a big push for the Republicans to maintain a stance that's against insurrections like these, against the Stop the Steal campaigns in the future, because it could cost them every single seat on the ballot. I just can't imagine what it'd be like for them if more individuals beyond just those three had contested the election after the insurrection at the Capitol. I just imagine it would be absolutely terrible. And so they need the funding. And I think that the funding, the money in our society is going to push them to kind of rethink where they're at right now. And one last thing I wanted to say about the Republican Party. Joe Biden talked earlier this week about wanting to have a strong Republican Party and the importance of having that strong Republican Party to maintain that balance in Congress. He's a big neoliberal. He wants a balance between, like myself, conservatism and liberalism to pursue a better future for Americans. And I think that there is a benefit to having a pragmatism and a middle ground approach in our nation. I think that we can achieve a lot of progress if we do try to reach a compromise between both parties and come to a common understanding through conversation. And that happens by having, once again, a common set of morals that's completely and absolutely key.
Yeah.
I think it's important to note that the true heart of the Republican Party, as you guys were saying, are people like John McCain, whose concession speech in 2008 to Barack Obama was so exemplary. Honestly, I was very young then, but even though I saw it recently, I was kind of in awe because I realized that not all politicians are vile and they're not all spewing hate. I think John McCain, his audience started booing, and he made it a point to say, no, I mean, Barack Obama won, that's it. He's going to be a great president, and you guys have to accept that. He's your president. But at the end of the day, I feel like it's been hugs for too long, to go back to Damien's words. We've been comforting the right for way too long. In fact, it's because we entertained Donald Trump's, I don't know, like imaginary, like belief world that he won this election. It's because we didn't correct him the first time he said it, the day after he lost in November, that we saw an insurrection at the Capitol building of the United States. So I think that's probably a fault of our own, but I do agree that we do need to increase education and information. A lot of these people are getting their news from Fox News, which we saw during the Capitol riots. They were airing something trivial and nothing related to the riots, but I think Andrea has something to say.
Yeah, Donvi, I'm genuinely curious. I know we're running out of like talking time. Usually we have like a certain amount of time we do our episodes for, but I'm enjoying this conversation so much. What do you think of the Trump censorship on like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Twitch, YouTube, literally every single, so what do you think of that? Do you think that that's, what do y'all think about that in general, Damien Varun?
Yeah, he deserved it. I mean, that's, you know, fun, ironically enough, right? One place where, again, me and Varun disagree economically. And I think that, you know, Varun was actually making I'm going to remember what you said, Varun, about corporations funding politicians, which is a socialist take in somewhat in an essence, if you chart to make it a little bit more aggressively, but these corporations are very powerful because of capitalist policies that the right pushes. So ironically, by allowing corporations to be so powerful, you allow them to limit free speech. And now You're crying about it because of the policies that you implemented. So you talk about a free market and how you want a free market. Well, you got your free market. Now you're banned on Twitter. You're banned on YouTube. You're banned on Google. Not that he probably used Google either way. But you're banned on all these different platforms. And, you know, I know, man, I've said this like 80 times now, but the thing that I love the most is people on Fox News crying about how like no one listens to them. Like, are you serious? You're on like the most watched talk show in all of America. And you're like, guys, they're quieting our voice. And then another thing to make.
Silent majority.
Yeah. Oh, this, what was it? The silent majority?
Silent majority.
I call them something on our podcast and on my live streams, I call them something else, but the can't be quiet majority is what I'll say here, or the can't be quiet minority is what I'll say here. But they keep saying that social media is big tech is on the left side. And I just want to know whose mama is lying to them. Like, literally the reason that you have QAnon supporters running rampant is because of groups literally on Facebook. Like, you have these people getting brainwashed on social media. Since when is big tech on the liberal side? That's another thing. While corporations might be putting on this Black Lives Matter on their Instagram, their funds are saying Black lives don't matter. And they're going and they're funding Republicans. You want to know why? Because Republicans give corporations tax breaks. So you have a continuing circle here. But we're going to see, hopefully, what Varun says is true and corporations stop funding Republican politicians. But, you know, to respond to the hugs, hugs over hate thing, I would just say can proceed with caution, because while I agree that we've been far too kind to the Republican Party and to right takes for far too long, especially me, someone that would probably be considered a Marxist by the Republican Party. I agree with that. But if we are too aggressive in our stance to push these individuals out, I have always said Donald Trump has a great chance to be the last Republican president in American history. But we have to keep the goalposts in the middle. And if we play our cards right, that will be true. That will be true. Donald Trump might be the last Republican president in American history. Depends what Joe Biden is going to do in his administration. But if we play our cards too far, he might be the proto-fascist.
Yeah. Right. So to kind of talk about Biden's administration now, just because you brought that up.
Yeah.
Over the past month, we saw that Biden has picked his staffers, his cabinet, the whole nine yards. And honestly, I gotta say, I miss diversity. When you prioritize putting people that look like you into your White House over people who actually know what they're doing, that's when the country turns to hell, right? So I think Biden's cabinet is incredible. It's exemplary. I know a lot of like Instagram pages have been saying, oh, like some of these people are too far to the center, too far to the right. Honestly, as a liberal myself, I believe that that's necessary right now. I know Republicans are usually the one pushing this whole unity narrative, but I honestly believe in it too. We need a peaceful transition of power, but that's not gonna work unless both parties realize that this needs to be a transition, right? Like, we can't just go from like the most right-wing people to people who are leftists, Marxists, radical liberals, I guess.
Hello, radical liberal Raphael Warnock, like Kelly Loeffler said, 10,000 times during that
Galvin right here during on the podcast.
He's our pet radical liberal.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I loved seeing Biden's cabinet picks, no matter how much their policies differed from my own. I did realize that he picked extremely credible candidates, William Burns to head the CIA. That was a pretty incredible pick. And his his entire staff is exemplary. I really do admire him for that.
Right. I mean, talk about women in politics. Half of his cabinet, if confirmed, will be female, which is the most, it's the first time in American history that that will happen. And it's also rare globally. Like, the United States will be the biggest country to have a cabinet or cabinet equivalent that is half female. However, I do notice, like, just seeing the positions that women have been put into within the cabinet, that men still have a lot of power. They've been put more into, like, lower level positions. I do not think that was completely, like, intentional. Were women put into lower level positions by the Biden administration on purpose? No, but I think, like I said, this is the start of change. And it's something really exciting. I'm really looking forward to see what happens within the next 4 years.
Yeah.
He kickstarted by releasing 100 million vaccines in his first 100 days.
Yeah.
He says, yeah.
Hopefully. I'm tired of being inside.
$1.9 billion economic aid package with money for the vaccine built into it for people that really need it. So I think this is going to be an exciting 4 years, regardless of what's happening right now. Hopefully it'll be exciting 4 years. And we'll see a lot of change. So with that being said, thank you so much to Damian and Varun for joining us today. We really did appreciate having your input, and you guys have such great things to say. So I really do encourage all of our listeners to go out and listen to Politoteen also. Andrea? Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, guys, go ahead, plug your podcast again, your socials. Yeah. Go ahead.
Go to www.politoteen.com. I'll give you a spot to see wrap up what I missed. But politoteen.com is our website. Our links to all of our social media and pages are linktr.ee/politoteen, linktr.ee/politoteen. And then we have social media at Politoteen Show on Twitter. Snapchat is Politoteen, Politoteen Show on Instagram. But the main thing is our website. We got a lot of information, content for you guys on there. All of our episodes in video and audio format are posted on there. We're on Spotify, as you guys are as well. So that's our social media and pages. Damon, anything to add?
Yeah, absolutely. You can listen to our podcast on all social media platforms. That's, Spotify, Apple Music, anywhere where you get your podcast, you can check that out. We have the 1 hour segments there. As Varun was saying, if you want to check out me and him bickering on for a little bit more, if we didn't piss you off enough with this conversation, you want to see us bickering on a little bit more, you can go check out our webpage. And on the top right, you will see a watch tab, and that'll take you to our YouTube channel where we upload the extended clips of our podcast. But, it was absolutely awesome being on the show. You guys are doing amazing things, and we appreciate the opportunity to come and me at least radicalize some more individuals. And for Varun, just talk, I guess. Yeah, there you go. Centralize.
I love being, I'm kidding. But yeah, thank you guys so much for having us on today.
Yeah, we loved it.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for coming. And I think one thing we need to end on is not hugs over hate, but handshakes, because I feel like handshakes are more passive. And I think that's a good middle ground. Not hugs. We're not loving them too much, but handshakes.
So handshakes over some gloves. Make sure to wear some gloves.
Yeah, only from 6 feet away, right? Like some
elbow bumps.
Handshakes.
But elbow bumps.
Right. There you go.
Handshakes over hate, but with like hazmat suits.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you guys for listening. And come back next month for our next episode of Breakdown, and check out our collab episode on Politoteen at the end of this month.
And this is the Breakdown.
Bye.